Welcome to the Andy Social Podcast. My name is Andy Dowling, bass player for the Australian metal band Lord. If you fancy yourself a bit of a metalhead, you love a bit of metal, you can go to lord.net.au and go and give our tunes a crack over there. A big thank you to everybody that's purchased the brand new live album, Live at Prog Power USA, recorded in 2016 in Atlanta, Georgia. It's available right now through lord.net.au, both the audio and the video. It's also available on live streaming, so you can listen to it right now or maybe after this podcast has ended. And thank you to everybody that pre-ordered the limited edition CD version as well, which is currently sold out. But if you missed out and you want a copy, shoot me a direct message. I might have a couple left over. Otherwise, there is a very small batch that will be made available in the coming weeks, but they will be a little bit more expensive than the initial pre-order price. So That's the way we roll, folks. So lord.net.au, you can go and check all that out. In addition to playing in the band, I also host the Self-Starter podcast. If you're into small business, self-employment or freelancing, you can go to selfstarter.com.au or you can search for Self-Starter on your preferred podcast player. A massive thank you to everybody that's been supporting me with this new venture. It's only been up and running since the end of November 2017, but I'm really, really happy and I'm excited with what it's done so far and where it's going. I've got some great plans for the upcoming months and even years. I can really see this being a long-term thing and a real large part of my life. So I'm excited to see where it goes. I'd love to get your feedback. I'd love to see ideas that come from you guys that have really been enjoying the podcast. I want to build it. I want to create a big brand out of it. Anyway, I won't keep carrying on about that, but I'm quite excited about it. And I really, really appreciate the support that you guys have given me so far. So go and check that out, selfstarter.com.au. Now, this week's shout out. If you are new to the podcast, welcome. For 2018, I've given myself a whole range of goals, as you do, but one of them is to do a shout out, a thank you on the podcast each and every week for 2018. And it's just a small way of me showing my gratitude for people that do great things for me, support the podcast, support the band, anything that I'm involved with. And it could be anything. It could be leaving a review on Facebook or Apple Music. It could be, or you know, another podcast player or somewhere on the internet. It could be sharing blog posts around. It could be sharing the episode links around. It could be liking, retweeting, all that kind of stuff. It could be tagging a mate. It could be introducing the podcast to somebody else. It could be a direct message of encouragement. It could be anything. It could be just you listening right now as well. Thank you. But anything and everything, it goes a long way to fuel my fire. It fuels the podcast. It fuels the band. It fuels everything that I'm involved with. So I'm always grateful and so thankful for people that take the time to really support what I do. It means a hell of a lot. So each and every week, I'm saying thank you to somebody that does something for me. And if you're involved in a project, or your type of job is something that you'd like to be highlighted, or you've got an interesting story or anything, I would be more than happy to do a plug as a small gesture to return the favor. It's only small, but it's a good starting point anyway. So this week's shout out, this week's thank you is for another old friend, Riley Perry of Shanghai, Mechanical Black. Now, you might know Riley if you've been a long-time listener of the Andy Social Podcast. He was on episode 5 of the Andy Social Podcast. You can go back to that podcast if you just scroll down in your podcast player, or if you're on the Andy Social website, you can go back to episode 5. There's heaps of direct links in that episode to Riley and what he's all about, all of his music projects as well. And it's a great episode, especially when we talk about quantum computing. It's a great example of me getting completely out of my comfort zone. So you can go and check that out over at andysocial.net. If you want to check out Shanghai, which is Riley's main project at the moment, you can go to facebook.com/Shanghai Music. Or you can go to theultraviolet.com as well and give some of his music a crack. It's a really, really cool band. Riley's a great guy. He's been a big supporter of me. He's left me a very nice Facebook review. Thank you, Riley. But he's been supporting since day dot, because he was on the podcast at day dot. But he's been a big supporter of Lord. His bands have been intertwined with Lord over the years. He's somebody that's highly respected in the Sydney music scene. He's somebody that I look up to, and I'm absolutely stoked and thankful that somebody of Riley's caliber is supporting what I do. So thank you, Riley. And as always, and as with everybody that has had a shout out so far in 2018, please shoot me a message. I'm going to go for a hunt around my house, see if I can find something, some crap lying around. I'll make sure it's not literally crap, but I'll make sure it's something I don't know, tangible that it can send that's half decent, because we all always like getting something in the post, and it's just a little thank you. So thank you very much, Riley. Really appreciate it. Go and check out Shanghai Music on Facebook or theultraviolet.com. Appreciate the support. Now, this week's guest is with Adrian Griffin. Adrian is the drummer in Sydney band Low, which you may have heard referenced in a previous episode with Odd Studio, who did a couple of Low's video clips. But Adrian's also a business owner. He's a web design and online marketer, and does a lot of work for small businesses around the place, creating websites. And I've got quite a few connections with Adrian. We played in a band together for a very short space of time. Didn't actually really sort of take off, but we talk about that in this episode. Adrian also has created my self-starter website. He helped me revamp the Andy Social website, and he's done a number of other web-based things for me behind the scenes as well. He always saves me because I have no idea when it comes to web development of any such. I'm hopeless. I have a short attention span and a very low tolerance for that kind of stuff, but Adrian is an absolute god when it comes to this kind of stuff. So he has an amazing business that caters for small business, mostly with a number of different packages, and he's building that and working on that right now. You can go to abepe.com.au and you can check out what his business is all about. It's really, really interesting. You can sign up for his mailing list and get a free PDF of some information. There's a lot of great insights. Even if you play in a band, and Adrian doesn't necessarily service bands too much these days, but you can certainly get a grasp of some of the things that you need to keep in mind when it comes to creating an online platform and not just relying on social media solely to push your product or your service or your music or whatever it might be. So, so go and check that out, abepe.com.au, or just go to andysocial.net in the show notes and you can check out everything to do with Adrian. Before we kick into this episode, Low has a brand new album out called Vestigial. I'm sure I butchered that one. You can go and check that out over at lookandbehold.net. You can buy that album straight away or get it on a streaming service or a digital download or anything of the such. But a really cool website, which Adrian designed as well, so you can go and have a look at that. But in addition to playing in Low, Adrian is a bit of a drumming whore. He's played in a whole range of different bands over the years. He's played and recorded for... Okay, hang on. Let me get my breath. He's played and recorded for 28 Days... Free or Dead, Degeneracy, Henderson Williams, A Gauge 4, Kilohertz, Salmon Hater, Salacious Crumb, Quad Box, Tub. He's filled in for Girls, Truth Corroded, Demon Pyre, Hell City Glamours, Tom Ugly, and the list goes on. He's played in a million different bands, and it's just so cool to talk to a really, really well-respected drummer, someone who's played with some amazing musicians over the years and has played some incredible venues and locations around the world as well. So I'll let Adrian do all the talking. As always, andysocial.net. You can check out everything that we talk about. If you want to reach out to Adrian, check out more about what he's all about. I'll have everything in the show notes over there. Enough of me. Please enjoy this episode with Adrian Griffin.
I've driven all the way from Bankstown.
Yeah, thanks for keeping it together.
And enjoying a tasty Thursday.
Yeah, what beer did you get?
Young Henry's, in fact.
Did you?
Just the Newtowner. That's kind of my go-to now.
Well, Oscar gave me two cases of Newtowner cans.
Yep.
And so I got overly excited and I've smashed almost both cases. So I saw it on tap easy. And I decided to get a summer ale instead. So sorry, Oscar.
That's good.
So I thought, how do I start off this podcast with you? And I thought the best way to start it off is you are one of the few people I know that, and I don't even know if you know this, you should. You got your own Wikipedia page.
I did know that, but it's so inaccurate. like you hear about Wikipedia pages being just wrong.
Yeah.
But there's some facts on there, but it's... I don't even know who's kind of added this stuff.
Well, it's not terribly self-indulgent, so I knew it wasn't you that made it.
It's so out of date. There's, like, stuff on there I'd like to see on there, but...
Yeah.
I don't want to, like... Maybe I'll get, like, a VPN and log in secretly and update it one day.
But well, I had a bit of a vain moment where a while back I thought, I really should, like, get a wiki page for myself and set it up so if people are searching they can see everything that I do. But I had no idea how Wikipedia works, so I started going through the tutorials, and there's all these disclaimers in there saying you should not create a page about yourself.
Yeah.
You should be good enough, more or less saying you should be good enough that someone else actually wants to make a page about you. And I went, oh. I had this reality check where I thought, oh man, maybe I'm not that good anymore. I think someone...
that's a reflection of how good I am. That's right. Not very up to date. It's got inaccurate information.
Well, someone was impressed at one point in time where they thought, you know what, this guy needs a profile set up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am.
Well, thanks for looking at it.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I mean, there wasn't a great deal there, but there was a bit of history on some of the bands he played with and all that. So I thought that was... It gave me a couple of notes to write down anyway, so it's good. I'm going to get the other thing out of the way really quick. You played in 28 Days for a bit.
Yeah. So?
No, nothing wrong with that. How many times did you play Rip It Up on stage?
Oh, every night, every show. You'd like, that's, you kind of have to play that very last so that people stay around. No, just kidding. I mean, we pretty much played it every night, and then most of the time did it like one song encore. Yeah. After that type of thing. But I mean, they're still touring occasionally now, and I guarantee when that song comes on, the whole room is, you know, jumping up and down.
It's become nostalgic now.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't that long ago. I remember it coming out, but it actually is a while ago now.
Yeah, I would have been like early 2000s.
Yeah.
It was long before I was in the band. But yeah, it was kind of, I mean, you go into autopilot and you're at the end of the set, so you're like kind of ready to go and have another beer. And
it's like, it's your The Horses for Darryl Braithwaite. You know, yeah. Darryl Braithwaite's going to put that at the end of the set, otherwise everyone's going to walk out.
Yeah, and I didn't even write it, so.
No, that's okay. From what I could see, you came in with that band. I think there was a standing guy in between, but their first drummer passed away.
He was their second drummer, actually.
Okay.
So they've had a lot of drummers over the years.
Oh, and Spinal Tap.
Yeah. So yeah, there was another guy after him, after the second guy who passed away, and then there was another guy after him, and there's been a few fill-ins as well. I know.
Okay.
Gordy from Frenzel might have filled in two shows here and there. Yeah. The original guy from The Living End played with them for a little while. The opportunity sort of came up when Scotty passed away, and a few people sort of told me about it, and I wasn't in the right place life-wise, so it was kind of like I didn't really... wasn't ready to go on tour and stuff like that. Yeah. Kind of in hindsight, I wish I had pushed a bit harder back then, but and strangely enough, the opportunity came up again like years later.
Was it just through mutual friends or something like that?
Yeah, I used to play in this band that we were booked by the same agent.
Okay.
And I bumped into him at a gig randomly. I'd heard they were looking for a drummer, but then I bumped into this guy and he was like, oh, let me put you guys in touch. And it was a bit of a mission, actually. Like, I had to kind of hassle their manager at the time, and if I hadn't have kept pushing, like, it was a bit of a, like, you just not hearing back.
Yeah.
And but then eventually I was sort of like, they were in Sydney for a harbour cruise they were playing on, and just went along, and I'd met them briefly before playing in other bands and stuff, but then just had a few beers and we hit it off, and
there you go. The beer's usually the yeah. last indicator. If you can get through that, that's usually what gets things over the line. Lots of deals. Being a drummer, and just like, this is the perfect example with what you just said with 28 Days. Do you find that you get people annoying you all the freaking time to play drums for their bands or do albums, fill in, become a permanent member for life?
not annoyingly. I do get asked. It kind of comes in waves. Like, I'll start filling in for someone, and sort of I'd normally chuck it up on social media and whatever, and then I'll just have a few weeks where a few people kind of ask what I'm up to and if I wanted to join a band. I probably prefer filling in, unless it's low, my current band. I like the kind of thing of filling in and learning new songs and sort of going through that process and then doing a few shows. But yeah, like, that's completely different to joining a band and going through the whole, especially a new band. It's like, you've got that whole, you know, when you start a new band, I don't know when you last started a new band, but there's like years of,
I don't know, when I was doing something with you for a while back with Lily and Andrew from Switchblade as well. That was like almost
that
a new band.
Yeah, kind of never really, well, I ended up moving overseas, so that kind of...
Yeah, I walked out, I told Lily, I said, nah, I can't commit to this. And then I think you may have hung around a bit longer, and maybe the guy from Cryogenic they were looking at.
Yeah, Steve was singing for a little while. A little
bit. Yeah.
But then we never had a bass player. And...
Oh, sorry.
Oh yeah, I didn't mean it. And then I ended up moving to Singapore, and sort of after about a month I came back for something else, and then we ended up doing a show because we managed to get a bunch of people in the same room.
I
we did a show it was with Truth Corroded.
Yep,
and that was the first time I met those guys. And then I kind of went, I'm living in Singapore, this is kind of going to be too hard to do. That was the second band. I was kind of doing low as well, and I decided to, if they were okay with it, once I moved overseas, I wanted to keep that going. So, but doing more than one band from overseas is just a nightmare.
That's it, that's it. Even just mentally. Mentally is huge, just to have to cop that. Well, I think Lily ended up using like a lot of the riffs from some of those demos and stuff, and ended up putting them over to Demonpire.
Yep.
So it wasn't all lost. So
No, it was good to finally hear those songs kind of see the light of day, because some of them, they were riffs he'd had for a long time, and then when we started jamming, they kind of evolved into... That band was called the A-Team, because...
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was like all of us were A's. Called it.
And then there was three Andrews.
Yeah.
Adrian and
then we didn't
Steve.
Have the singer at the time. And then, Steve eventually came in and I'd gone on by that stage. But because I've still got... I was cleaning up some stuff on my laptop the other day and I found a folder and it says A-Team and there's all these riffs and song demo ideas from Lily that I was trying to remember to learn and whatever. So I listened to a few of them and thought, oh, no, I've heard these riffs somewhere else with better production. I thought, oh, no, that's right, they're on that album. So
when was it, last year I think, or maybe the year before, I filled in for a few run of shows with Demonpire, so I already kind of knew a few of those songs because we recorded a few different demos of that stuff and it was kind of it was good to finally hear them on an actual record that got released.
I think for Lillian probably would have been quite good because I think, as you said, like, he'd had those riffs for years and just been sitting on them, and for whatever reason, I think I remember him saying a few failed attempts over the years of trying to get people together and this thorn in his side. So it was good to... He's obviously... And now he's got another hurdle to jump through with a few other member changes. But so just going back to what I said before about, I guess, being a drummer. So apart from low, it's much better for you to work as a session guy, to be able to come in, know what you got to learn it, do the job, and then move on to the next thing.
Yeah, it's sort of, I think, when I was younger, I worked in a drum shop and was sort of surrounded by that world of kind of session drummers and the whole... That was just kind of a thing that, and every, like, most of the drummers I knew kind of were aspired to being that kind of drummer.
Yeah, right. Okay.
And I guess when I was younger, I wanted to do it more, like, just sort of, I did play in a lot of bands that were not my style at all, but it was more like I'm playing drums and, you know, so it was something like if a band would sometimes call up the drum store and go, we've got a cover band, we're playing at Bondi Icebergs.
Yeah, right.
Our drummer can't make it. Do you have anyone that can sort of just come in at an hour's notice? And
would you do them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, and you'd sort of, you know, it'd be anything from AC/DC to Darryl Braithwaite to whatever, you know, all the hits, even the Wiggles every now and then, which now I'd be totally fine with. And people at those type of gigs, like, there's no one there holding scorecards,
nope.
checking you're playing the right fills or whatever.
Especially if you're doing multiple sets. By that third or fourth set, everyone just wants to hear the hook. That's
So yeah, I guess like doing that years ago, and I always, when I was even going further back, as a kid, I'd be playing along to cassettes in my bedroom, and you know, just picking up. Like, and Justice for All, and even before that, you know, it's just kind of always been something I've been really interested in learning, hearing a song and working out. And, but I've always liked to get the song as close as possible to the actual, like, play all the right feels and, you know, that sort of thing.
Have you lost count with the amount of bands that you play with over the years?
Yep.
Yeah.
It'd be in the 30s, easily, but. Just trying to think. And I've played bass in a band.
Actually, I think that's on your Wikipedia page.
Yeah, that was kind of, I was really sick of drumming at that point, and this band that I knew the guys from this studio, my other band rehearsed at, and then ended up joining as their bass player. And we got signed to a major label and played at the Horden a couple of times. And I'm like standing there playing bass, going, why am I playing bass?
It's all right. There's anything wrong with bass,
but, you know, drums are my interest.
Well, that's it. If that's your thing and you've been brought up with it and what you know, then, naturally to sort of stick with that. But who did you play with at the Horden?
Incubus.
No shit. You supported Incubus twice?
Yeah.
Same tour, or you mean like two separate tours?
Well, actually, we did play the tour before that, which was at the Enmore.
Okay.
And then twice.
And they scaled up.
At the, yeah.
Fucking hell.
I think they're coming back again. I keep seeing ads on Facebook.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, them talking in the studio or something.
It's horrible.
Leave it on mute. Yeah, wow. How did that go down? Incubus crowd.
Oh, it was fine, yeah. I mean, there's always... No one's really there to see the support band, unless, I mean... I guess sometimes they are, but we were pretty... We had a good booking agent, so we weren't heaps well-known. I guess, like, we sort of had a bit of a following, but we weren't really Incubus level.
Yeah.
We definitely weren't there as... you know, a band that was going to pull extra numbers for Incubus.
That's right, we're going to help you guys out, don't worry about it. We'll fill the rest of that horde.
Yeah, but it was pretty... I've always found, like, it's kind of easier to play those massive crowds than, like, when there's 100 people in the room.
Easy.
You can see everyone's face
when
there's 100 people, but when it's, like, the horde and you look out and it's just different.
Well...
The hardest bit is, like... making it look like you're actually doing something on stage, because you have to exaggerate it and
you know. Well, I remember when I first started playing live fairly consistently, that was like, wasn't that long ago, it was probably 12 years ago, 06 I think it was, and so Tim in our band, he's been playing for years, and so one of the things he kept saying to us all the time, and I laughed when he first said it, he goes, you've got to be over the top, you've got to like have this flair where you just over exaggerate everything you do. And he's like, we were rehearsing or whatever, and he's like throwing his arms around the place as he's like hitting notes on his guitar, and I just laughed at him because it looked so fucking dumb.
But that's not
how you play the riff. Like, you know, you don't need to do all this extra shit. Just play the riff. And he's like, yeah, but if you're out in the crowd, especially in a bigger room, you need all that extra stuff. Otherwise, it looks like you're static and there's nothing happening.
Even if you feel like you're jumping around like a madman,
it still looks
kind of like you're just doing a little pirouette or something.
I know. I mean, even for us, like our that live album we put out not too long ago from the US, and I'm watching myself, and I remember before I got on stage saying, I need to go to 100 straight away and stay there for the whole show. And I watch it and I go, Nope.
He's just kind of cruising around.
Nope. There's a few times where I ramp it up a bit, but there's other times where I'm watching it going, what are you doing? Like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, why are you turning around looking at your amp for? Like, what, you just fucking play it up. So anyway, but I agree, playing in front of like a bigger room versus like a pub, something like that, it's so much easier to play in a bigger room.
You
can look across and everyone becomes just a bit of a blur.
I've definitely played to like 10 or 20 people. That's way harder.
That's really hard. And to try and still put on a show and make it look like you're not fazed by the fact that there's no one there without being too cocky either. It's really hard. I've had a few of them, especially the old school pubs where you're in the public bar and there's no stage and they're at your eye level, so it's not only you can see their faces, but you're the same height as them. You can't even like sort of look down or look over their heads. It's like, no, they're just looking straight at you, and most of them are drinking, so they're like breathing into the mic or into your face, and it's like, oh, fuck.
Full on.
Let's break. All right, we're back. We needed a beer break.
Yeah.
Did you get the same?
Mm-hmm. Newtown
Ale. And I got the same?
Yes, Summer Ale.
There you go, thank you. Okay, so I'm going to shift gears a little bit. Oh, which one can I pick? No, actually, I'll touch on... So you would have listened to my previous episode with Odd Studios.
Yes.
For Odd Studio. Who did both your video clips. Is there only two video clips you guys have done?
We've
done more than that? For Load?
There's another couple from like our first album, but the second one had like some special effects, but it was pretty. The first one was basically like us with GoPros on our heads. And then there was another one. I've totally forgotten about
that. That's right. I feel better now because you're in the band. You can't remember, so...
So Adrian, our bass player...
Yeah, the two other Adrians, Adrian.
he's a producer, so he normally tees up all the film clip stuff. And, I've got to admit, when he comes up with an idea, I'm like, okay... That sounds good.
In theory.
But then by the end of it, when it's done, I'm like... Like, that's why he does what he does, because he's just... And he's constantly... Like, he's always making up silly names, and he's a bit mental. Hi, Adrian.
Yeah, in a creative way.
Yeah. So... Yeah, like... what was the question again?
I was just wondering how many clips you've done with Odd, but it was the last two.
Yes, last two with Odd. The second one might have been, I don't know if it was with them, but it had special effects in it. So
yeah, okay. All right.
There's a guy who's walking along and there's blood everywhere, and then by the end you realise he's got no head. He's been walking along for...
Has to do. Happens to all of us.
Yeah.
I was amazed at... I mean, I remember when at least Orca and Locust Christ...
Yep.
..were put out in their own time. But when I saw them, I was thinking, man, these guys... Like, are they on a major label? Where's the funding coming from to get, like... And just looking at... And knowing, like, for us, we've always... Like, Tim in our band and a friend of ours, James, they've got their own video production company, so they do all their videos. But ours are pretty much just... It's more the fact that we've got the gear and we do a bit of special effects here and there, but I mean, it's cheesy stuff, but it's just us performing for the most part. But when I saw the special effects, prosthetic sort of stuff, all this extra stuff, I thought...
It's a lot of time as well. But I think, like, what I can tell from, like, the film industry is everyone really, really loves doing the projects that are super just left of field and creative, and... Everyone's really super keen to help out and just kind of be involved in something that's not maybe like a, you know, just a normal everyday job for like an ad for an insurance company or something
down,
like
yeah.
that.
You know? I guess it comes down to the pitch, isn't it? Like, if the pitch is good enough and it's exciting enough, then you'll win people over. People will want to actually do more to help you. Yeah.
And it's all kind of everyone has fun. It's not the kind of thing you turn up to and go, oh, I've got to grind through this again. Like, it's a really fun day where you kind of, you know, all this cool stuff's happening, you know.
Well, I think even the last one, Lucas Christ, with, and I think from what the guys said, like, the stages that they had to do, had to keep going back and adding extra bits of prosthetics and whatever. And, I mean, I watched that clip and I'm watching the start going, oh, yeah, whatever. I can see what's going on.
I know, like, it's a, like, what, 2.5 minute song?
Yeah, not, it's nothing even to it. I saw how much can happen in 2.5 minutes, and they're just sitting there looking at each other and whatever, and then the next minute it just escalates and escalates and escalates. You go, there's nothing inappropriate going on,
but it's really,
at the same time, you're really so awkward. Uneasy. You're just watching, go, oh, I'm not disgusted, but I'm kind of disgusted by it because I just don't really know. It looks unnatural. It's weird. So
yeah.
But apparently, like, from what they said, you know, the amount of time it took for each stage to be able to piece it all together.
I was there the whole day, just taking footage and photos. That's kind of a bit of a hobby for me, is taking photos, and I've always got a GoPro running when there's live bands playing. But, like, so they really planned it out, and I hadn't even thought about how they would do that. Like, Shapiro told me about the idea and I went, yeah, that sounds cool. And then, but so throughout the course of the day, they'd kind of really planned out, okay, we're going to do this scene which has this. I guess that's how film works, but yeah. I don't work in it.
Oh, I'm the same.
You've got to plan it out.
You just slap it all together, work it out in the day.
But I think, like, from that, I'm pretty sure it's not always that linear. Like, they'd planned it out. With the prosthetics, they have to do it that way because they're adding layers and whatever. And so they'd shoot a scene and then make sure everything had been shot with that particular setup, with, like, where one eye was covered, and then where two eyes were covered, and then the nose was covered, and then the mouth. When they had their mouths covered up, and they had, you don't see it in the clip because it was kind of CGI'd out, but they just had these two tiny little nose holes, but other than that, they're completely sealed. So they started kind of, the actors started,
what, like, getting a
bit, kind of like they were getting a bit claustrophobic because it was black and they had their mouth covered. Like,
that's it. There's not much air. It's, like, so limited through your nose.
And there was a few times where we had to kind of go, it's okay, we're here. Because they didn't know if we were next to them. Oh, okay.
So you walk off,
they were walking, like, out onto the road.
The next thing, you're having a chat over there. They're just sitting there.
I'm just going to go grab a sandwich. They're out on the middle of the road. But it was, we're really lucky to have Shapiro in the band to, not just, he's really good at organising tours, and we're self-managed, so it's kind of, and that's, like, that's kind of how the band runs as well. Just to segue over to the band, is that we're all, like, Carl, our guitarist, he does all the graphic design, all the album artwork, t-shirts. We sometimes get other designers that do designs for t-shirts and stuff, but most of that's, it's all kind of curated by Carl. He's
got his vision. He knows knows what it's going to be, how it looks.
And between the rest, us, him and the rest of the band, it's, nothing's, we're really, if something's a little bit lame or whatever, we're like, nah. If someone brings something that is a bit lame that everyone else is like, you know, it's kind of, we like to keep that kind of stuff.
It's good having, like, the additional talents, the skills in the band, of, on top of just, like, being able to actually play music and write music, like, having the graphic element, having sort of this video production element, having all this sort of stuff.
I do all the website stuff and Facebook ads and, you know.
Oh, how about your Facebook ads? Struggle?
It's all right. I mean, I've learnt heaps in the last couple of years, mainly the last year, especially before we toured Europe at the end of last year, and I'd use it as a sort of test to see if I could somehow get that sort of stuff working, to try and get people to shows, I guess. Because there's, I don't know how else you promote a tour like that if you don't.
Was that DIY as well for the most part?
Yeah, well, we had a a booking agent over there that teed up all the shows. Yep. But and our label's based in Berlin, so.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But really, it is DIY, and we were going to places where some of the gigs were sort of not much more than like a lounge room. So.
Well, I think it might have been
just to kind of fill out gaps here and there in the
I think it might have been one like it might have been your last show of the tour. It was the last show of the tour, like in, I don't know, I could be wrong here, but
no, last show was really good.
There's one show where it was like, it looked like someone's lounge room. It was like really, it was like a, I don't know, some sort of small community space.
We played on the ground,
I think, pretty much.
We played in like the lobby of a rehearsal studio in Belgium.
Oh, okay, yeah.
That was actually a really fun gig. We got there and this dude was like the owner of the studio. It just reeked of something, but it was like we walked in and he's got this bag, these massive buds, and it just reeked. And we were like, oh, this is gonna be great, because Sam, our singer, we all don't like it when everyone's smoking inside. It just makes it really difficult, but especially Sam because of his voice, like. So we get there and these people are just smoking these massive joints and everyone was just going, oh, this is gonna be hard. But then it ended up being really fun. Like, there was just heaps of people were into it. They were standing around. We were like,
smoke took over.
Right in our face. Yeah, maybe that's what happened. It was really slow set that night.
That's hard in Europe. Like, even just to go and see shows in Europe, it's just so many places, it's still completely fine to smoke indoors. And you just go,
you forget what it was like.
What it was like.
You used to go to the Annandale and the next day you just sort of walk into the kitchen and your clothes would be hanging up and
I mean, I just remember going home and just lying there and your hair stinks and you're wondering why, like, your sinuses and your throat are sore and just going, oh, that's just what it is, like. And I used to, like, so oblivious, I just put it down to drinking alcohol because I thought, I don't smoke, even though I'm in this like smoky room. But then as soon as like the laws came in, it was like, oh my god, like, I'm waking up.
I can drink so much more now.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I can double the amount. But I think that's a real eye opener over in Europe, where I saw Venom Inc. and Desecrator from Melbourne in Prague, and this was like this fire trap, like downstairs in this basement, and it was a decent sized room when you got down there. But everyone's smoking down there. You could actually see it was all misty in there, and I was there with Jess, and Jess like. We watched Desecrator play, and I think Vital Remains were playing as well. And we had to leave like two songs into Vital Remains, just like, I can't handle this. Like, this is hurting. And I'm like, yeah, we got to go.
It does actually hurt.
It's
and when you got to play as well, it's like, like going for a run, but like a helmet full of smoke or something on. Like, it's.
Yeah. So I think it'll be a while, I think, before a lot of that changes in Europe.
Oh, it seems like
a different culture there.
It was only in a few places that it was like that. Like, maybe four or five gigs, people were just full-on smoking inside. But, like, most of the places have kind of gone, this is just not cool. Well, I guess it was mostly the kind of more DIY gigs where there's no rules.
They just don't give a fuck. It's just like, yeah, whatever. You guys did Euroblast as well?
That was the first show of the tour, and we ended on another festival called Into the Void.
Oh, okay.
Which was in
Europe.
Europe. the place with the clogs.
Oh, or somewhere in the Netherlands. Netherlands. Somewhere in the Netherlands. Yeah.
That was really good. And then we finished the night by dancing like absolute idiots.
Sounds all right. Good way to.
Yeah, it was a good after party. That
good way to end off the tour. But a lot of that's, I mean, as you said, label's based in Berlin, but it's pretty much DIY. I mean, you guys are going to hustle to try and
get people to know that. It definitely helps having them to kind of, like, they help promote the album when it comes out, and just the fact that we're associated with that label kind of helps with like other bands know who we are and. Really, like, the overall organisation of it is done mostly by Shapiro, Adrian, the other Adrian, and yeah.
So with the,
I honestly don't have a lot to do with the organisation of the of that stuff, which is
I'm so fucking envious.
It's a little bit on purpose because
no, absolutely. I mean, especially if you've got other things that are on your plate that you need to put your time into.
Yeah, I'm kind of when I'm back here, I'm running a full time business, so it's kind of I do like the parts I can do.
Yeah,
but I used to be a bit more of a control freak and wanted kind of be involved in everything, but I just. You know,
I think that's so like because in I'd be Shapiro's equivalent, I guess, in our band as far as just logistics,
yep.
trying to make sure everything's you know, there's a schedule, there's and trying to set everything up. And that's a bit of a control freak aspect of me, but it's also this whole thing of well, there's nobody else doing
yeah,
it,
if I don't
so
do
I'll
it,
do
someone
it,
else
yeah, yeah,
won't.
And but I love the idea of just going, you know what, like having the reassurance that it's moving and it's doing its thing and being able to go, yeah, cool, I don't actually need to worry about that. I can focus on just getting the job done.
Yeah, I wouldn't know what that's like, really. Like, I mean, not in terms of me having to do it, but I guess I've always been in a band that's in bands that have had some kind of element of there's always been someone in the band. I mean, even if you have a manager, there's got to be one person in the band that sort of deals with the manager and makes sure they're doing their job. If you just let it completely go, then I don't know. I always think, like, unless the person's actually in the band, I don't know. I've never been in the Beatles or anything, so I don't know. I don't know what it's like to have someone that totally takes the reins and does it like everything.
Yeah, I think
without having to kind of check in and make sure things are being done.
We had management for a little while and it was good, but
probably still found you were having to kind of follow up stuff and
yeah, we could find that, and they were really good with what they did and they got us a lot of good opportunities, but you could see where things weren't being done and it wasn't any fault of theirs. It was just that we were the ones that were hands-on with it, and so we could see we had the creativity, we had the ideas, and so to try and execute them was difficult. So then it got to a point where I think we could do all of this ourselves, and so we did it. And then ever since then I've been looking for management again. Yeah. So I'm like, oh fuck, I've overcommitted here. But
bad when like I'm really starting to realize it now, that even if you know how to do something and you can do something, it doesn't necessarily mean you should do it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. There's with my business, I know how to do everything, but I'm starting to kind of change that in a way where I can get certain things that I'm not necessarily that good at or don't like doing, get someone else to do it.
Yeah.
Not because I just want to palm it off, but yeah, that's why I want to do it.
It's that outsourcing thing where, you know, if you can find someone else that can take on a bit of the pain or the tediousness of doing a task that either you don't completely know or have the confidence in, but yet you don't have the time to actually invest to actually get better, or you can't see the value in you actually investing the time to get better at that thing when you can just pay someone to get it happening.
Totally.
So segue, your business.
Yeah.
You're a self-starter.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, where do I start with this? Okay, I'll start with web design in general. So web design is primarily the main thing that...
Yep, but that's where I ended up, because I was in the right place at the right time. Like, the reason I started... The first kind of jobs that I did where I got paid for it, working for myself, was doing like drum sale brochures for Billy Hyde's. When I used to work at Billy Hyde's, and I would do them in-house, and I taught myself how to do a bit of graphic design pretty badly, but I kind of took it upon myself to get those done for them and then arrange all the bulk mailing back when you did like thousands and thousands of envelopes. I got to the point where I kind of knew I wanted to play in bands, but it's really hard to do if you have a full-time job. So I kind of, the reason I originally started the business was so I could do that and go on tour when I felt like it and sort of not have to kind of ask for sick leave and whatever. And then, but then just over the years with, like that was early 2000s. So bands I was in had websites and I took an interest and was like, oh, I'll figure out how to update that. And there was no Google back then, so it was sort of just sort of figuring it out. And then
bit of HTML.
Yeah, and and then people that weren't in bands would start, that actually had money, would start asking for, like, you know, actual businesses wanting websites done. And you'd sort of, someone would find out through the grapevine that you did that. And there weren't as many of us around back then, so it was kind of... and back then I would just say, yeah, I know how to do that, and then just spend pull all nighters trying to figure out how to do stuff. And and the technology is changing all the time. I don't do as much really any print stuff anymore. Every now and then I'll do some business cards if someone needs them, but it's mostly web design. And I'm sort of moving a bit more towards online marketing, as well as, like, the website is sort of just one tool that you need now that's you can't really rely on just that. So it's, but it's always been the goal to do that so that I can do other stuff without, like, playing in a band, especially the type of music Low plays, is kind of, it's never going to be something that I can live off. So it's sort of always been really pushing to do that as a way to kind of fund the rest of my life and be able to play in a band and not worry about, you know. And that's pretty much where everyone in the band's at as well. Like, Carl's a graphic designer and he used to do a bit of web stuff, but he's just an awesome designer. So he's doing that, and Shapiro's doing the producing, and Sam, I don't really know what Sam does. He lives in Melbourne. He just likes to close talk people.
Just floats with the breeze.
Hi, Sam.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you're able to find a balance between doing what you love as far as music, but then actually being able to make money off doing something else that gives, that you're it's relying on you to be able to put the effort in. Like, you're not, there's no boss, there's no time to clock in, clock out. You just work when you need to work. As scary and as unreliable as it can be, it's obviously like a huge upside to have something like that.
And like, I go through stages where, so like the end of last year, we went to Europe for a month, and then it was Christmas holidays, and so that part of the year, and then January is normally pretty quiet anyway, no matter what I'm doing. So there's kind of 3 months where I wasn't doing much on the business, and then when all that had died down, I got back into February and got a few new work comes in every time that kind of year, just however it comes in. And and then I get all fired up and start working on my business heaps, and then that kind of keeps it rolling for a bit, and then it's a bit of a cycle of, and then Lowe's going to Japan in May, so it's gonna be it's our first time there. And but so like I'll work pretty full on up to then, and then we'll go there, and then that'll be a bit of a, you know, I won't be doing as much, but it's just having that freedom to.
So, and you, I love guys wouldn't work on tour at all, or try not to, you try to just leave it separate.
I sort of check email, but it's when we're in Europe, it was half like that. We went for, at one point, I think about 3 days where we just couldn't get any internet. Yeah, and it was like, if anything happened, I'd be right. Like, sorry.
Yeah.
And most places have internet, like most cities, but, and especially when you get to, you've been driving all day, you get to a venue, you got to load in, then you got to find food, or if you're getting food at the venue or whatever, then you want to just sit down, have a beer, and then you might have to set up, and then, like, there's not really...
It's not that much time.
You might find a little window to do some work, but it's sort of, you end up going, ah, fuck it. It's not, I'm not doing like brain surgery over the internet, so it's like, no one's going to die if I disappear for a couple of days.
Yeah, yeah. I had this this romantic sort of view of being on tour and like having your own business and being able to work anywhere in the world, so that you actually, as a result, you're not drinking as much booze and you actually like, you know, all that.
I would just do it all at once.
Just do it at once. Just like the quality of work just goes down and down. But
I reckon I do my best work at like 9 o'clock at night after a couple of years.
Well, actually, the last guy I was talking to, which that podcast will be out by now, with Cliff, he asked me after the recording, he said, we're talking about writing blogs, because this guy writes a lot of blogs about resuscitation, and he said, when's the best time that you like to do blogs? Because I mentioned the self-starter stuff, and I hesitated and I thought, oh, fuck it. I said, oh, usually about Friday afternoon, about 5 o'clock after I've had two cans. And he just laughed and he said, oh, that sounds good. Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, I said, that's when I get focused. Like, there's less distraction. I'm not like thinking all over the place. I'm honed in.
Yeah. Like Friday afternoons, I think it gets to like 3 o'clock and you go, oh, it's the end of the week. I'll probably get more done in those 2 hours than I would, you know, in a normal
day.
Normal week.
So, being self-employed, how do you create any form of self-discipline to keep you going through the week? Do you have like a structure of how you plan your day or plan your week? Or,
well, I've always sort of stuck to a routine. I've never been. You have days where you're just like, oh, I'm just going to mix it up a bit today and, you know, change, you go out, you know, not do my normal routine. But I think I've just been doing it that long that I just have my routine. It changes, especially when you go on tour. That's when it always kind of messes it up a bit. Mm. And then you get back and you get a bit of post-tour depression. And but then, so at the moment, we've got an 18-month-old daughter. Well, she's 20 months now, but so pretty much up at every morning at the same time, about 6:30, if we're lucky. But and then we've got a dog who I really enjoy going for a walk in the morning, because that's when I listen to podcasts and just kind of go get a coffee, and then so I just sort of, I think it's having a solid routine. Even like things like getting up and making the bed, just doing those set little things that kind of sort of like set you up. That first half an hour when you get up, it sets you up, if you do all the same things, to just kind of, yeah, I don't know. I know a lot of people who work for themselves that kind of struggle with that, like getting stuff done. I know, I have days where I just feel really unproductive, but it's like, I try and get to my desk at the same time every day, and then I've actually this year just started using like a paper diary and a pen, which I've never done. Like more like a weekly planner, where it's and I'm not that bothered about it being neat and tidy or whatever. And I guess I've always sort of gone, oh, what's the point in using it if you want to change something? It's like I've just gotten old and realised it doesn't matter if you change your plans. Who cares?
It doesn't matter. Yeah.
So, but just. Even the night before, or if I think of something during the day, I just kind of write it in, and I've been just getting so much done. Like,
I think it's massive doing it the night before.
Yeah.
Like,
I used to go to bed like with a.
It's starting to program in your head. Yeah. It's like this subconscious thing.
And then like you get it out of your head, and then, I mean, I still go to bed and stare at my phone until I go to sleep, which is something I've really got to like stop doing.
Yeah, I know. Me too.
Everyone does it, but. Yeah, I think it's just having a routine and it helps. It just getting out of your own head, I guess.
I used to do to-do lists first thing in the morning, and whatever time I get up, and I'm sitting there having breakfast, and I would use pen and paper, and I'm writing out, which I think is massive. I put them in my phone. I've got a to-do list rotating thing that I keep updating just in Notepad, but I actually physically write it out as well.
How long is it?
Well, when I first started, there was like 20, 30, 40 odd things on there, but then you realize like, when like you look at it,
a day,
yeah, that's it. When you first look at it and you go, oh wow, there's so much stuff, and then at the end of the day there's like only four left, you go, I'm so productive, and you realize like three quarters of them are all like move this thing to that side of the room or fix that up yeah. or like stupid little shit. So then you start to realize, okay, what are the three or four main things today that I need to get done, and then prioritize them and deal with it. But I used to do it in the morning, and you're so frazzled. At least, I mean, I get up early, but I'm not a morning person. I'm not switched on. I have to ease into it. And so for me to get into the right headspace and even think about what I have to do is so hard. So my success rate of actually writing out a to-do list was pretty low. But at night, my head's in a better space. So like it's more energetic. I'm thinking about different things. I've already been thinking about everything through the day. So I've already sort of built up to this point. And before I go to bed, I'd have this scrap piece of paper and I'd write down exactly, especially if I'm at home the next day. That's the deadliest thing for me. So if I'm not at home, then I've got a better chance of me getting a lot of stuff done because I'm on the move and I'm moving around and I don't know, there's an energy around it. But if I'm at home, I have to really pre-plan because it's just so easy to get distracted by something and then realize, oh shit, 3-4 hours have gone.
I think what's working for me is just having 3 to 5 things each day, and I don't always get them done every day, but if I have 3 to 5 things that I write down with an actual pen with my hand on a piece of paper, and then if I sit down to get them done, I just kind of like I just start doing them, and it's hard with like I get really distracted easily, and if you're not really into the thing you're doing, it's so easy to kind of go and rearrange your sock drawer a little bit. It's like if you've got a list of 40 things, there's no way. Like, it's just, you go, oh, fuck it. It's too much.
So, I mean, what do I do with my phone? Because sometimes I won't have a pen and paper with me all the time, so I use Notepad on my phone a fair bit. And so I've got, like, you know, 7 separate notes in there. It's to-do list Monday, to-do list Tuesday. And so then I type a few things in there, and then I'll, whatever's left over, which is bad to do, but I do it anyway. Whatever's left over, I will copy and paste it or cut and paste into the next one, and so I've got it sitting in there at the top of the list for the next day, and then I hope that in theory that it gets done first on the following day. But that's good for being on the move, and I'm sort of I've made myself accountable on the time. But
like if something comes into my head and I'm out or not next to it, like I've been using I'm so tied to my phone, like it's I think it was more of a thing of just if I have a totally separate place for each day to kind of just go, right, I want to do this, this and this. It's like not, I know I'm not going to copy and paste it or anything. And if I don't get it done that day, I'll just put a line through it and move it to wherever it, you know, or just maybe go, oh, that doesn't need to be done, really.
I had one today where it's been moved from day to day to day for the last 3 weeks. And I looked at it and I went, that's a fucking dumb thing to do. And I just got rid of it.
What is
and
it?
It was something stupid. It was like, it was read through.
Brush teeth.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, shit, yeah.
I was wondering what that's
yeah. It was like read through an old message from somebody to pull out some information for something.
Oh, right.
And I realized that it was just me being a little bit too anal about something.
No, I'll do that.
I already knew the information that's in my head.
So I'd see something I want to read up on online, and I'll just open it in my browser and just have a tab there, and then that's my reminder. Is every time I open my browser, I'm like, oh, I must read that. but then it sits, and then it gets to the point where you can't open anymore.
So you got tabs. An iPhone? Yeah. So it's got the flip thing of all that.
And I sometimes flip back and go, oh, I've got to read that. And then there's 5 other things since then that I've ranked in my head are more important to read.
mine's the same. Like, and I think my phone's going to crash soon because there's just that many open windows. And I go, no, I'll open it up there, leave it for later. It's like saving a link. Deadly.
I mean, it's really weird to think about. When mobile phones first started getting popular, I was like such a staunch.
Yeah.
Never getting a mobile phone.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
I would have called the TV a fad. I reckon, when I was... But I love technology. It's really weird. I'm such a, like... I just love it and hate it.
Yeah. I remember years ago, playing a show in Melbourne, and we were sitting in a pub in St Kilda, and the guys had early versions of smartphones, and so had enough that you could browse on the net and do all this stuff, and I had, like, this flip phone that... It was a step up from a Nokia brick, but it was pretty much, I think it had Snake on there or something else, and I'm done. I've got nothing to do on my phone, and these guys had their heads in their phone, and I mocked them and said, this is ridiculous, you know, we're sitting around here, we should be talking. Yeah. And then they're like, oh, anyway, so I made a big point about it. I think about 6 months later, I got my first smartphone,
yeah,
and I'm worse than all of them,
yeah,
combined.
Totally.
Constantly had my head in my phone.
I know, I've got a side project band with the band Sumaru, the singer from that band. He wrote a bunch of songs, and that was another thing where he contacted me and said, oh, hey, I've got some songs. Do you want to put some drums on them? And he sent them through, and I was like, this is awesome. It was kind of like old school punk stuff,
yeah,
and
cool. Different
to anything else I was doing. So, and that was with one of the guitarists was a dude I've played in bands with for years, and you probably don't know this, and I don't know if it is even on the Wikipedia page you speak of. Do you remember that band Salmonator?
Yeah, yeah.
So that was the dude who wrote that, those songs. He's in this band, and
oh,
I played drums on that as well.
Oh, okay.
Just to throw a random thing out.
Random connection.
But anyway, the singer in that band, I'd sort of met him at gigs before, but then when I went to go and record drums, I think I'd kind of sent him a message or something, and he hadn't checked it or whatever happened. And then I got there, and he's sort of like looking at this like it was an actual Nokia brick. Like, I don't know if it had a colour screen or if it was one of the green and black,
yeah,
but I was like totally blown away by it. And he was just like, yeah, I've got to get away from like having a smartphone. And
I know a few people have done that.
Like, I don't know, I couldn't do it, I don't reckon.
No.
I'm sure you could, but it'd probably be like the best thing in the world.
It could be this life-changing moment where everything suddenly just gets so much better than what it was before. But I don't know, there's an element of fear there of letting go of it, which is probably the problem in itself. That's probably an indicator.
Total,
to say
yeah,
that
fear of missing out on that. I know that when I like sitting on the couch to relax, even probably watching something on TV, I'll still pick up my phone and flick through Facebook just in case there's something that's happening that it's really fucking shit.
Well, it's usually me. Like, I'm sitting on the couch and trying to have a conversation with Jess, and then I flick through my phone and see something about, like, I don't know, cryptocurrency, so I send you a message.
I'm giving you the worst advice.
No.
No, I'm basically saying I'm not a financial advisor.
Was it? Yeah, that's right. And then back and forth about, you know, crypto, and then, and so just, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm just thinking, I'm making money, go away.
So, providing for our family.
That's right. I'm building for our future. Yeah.
There's so much out there. Like, I'll see an article about, I don't know, how to get the best sound from miking a kick drum, and then go and read a quarter of that article and go, oh, I can't be bothered reading it, and then flick through and find something about whatever, internet marketing, and then something about cryptocurrency will pop up and I'll go, oh, that's shit. And then I'll see a funny animated GIF or GIF or whatever, however you want to say it.
Oh, I don't know what
and
I said.
I'm like, and then you're like, where was I? Yeah.
It's like all over the place. It's constant distraction all the time. It's exciting because I think you can find out anything that you could possibly want to know. But it's like, where do you draw the line where you just realise, it's that sort of awareness that you go, do I actually need to know this information right now? Or is it just a nice to have? Or yeah, or ever. And then sort of just going, nah, close, delete, get rid of it, and then move on to the next thing. But I've got so much stuff because I freak out thinking that if I don't know it, then it'll be a point in time where I wish I had have spent the time to learn it. But
I was actually, I can't remember what it was reading something about the difference between, it's like, you know, people go to university and learn all this stuff in case, I don't want to get the story wrong because it's going to come out sounding wrong.
But like, do it anyway.
It's kind of like learning stuff in case you need to know it, as opposed to learning stuff when you need to know it. You know what I mean? Like, it's also, like, say if you're moving house or something, moving, say, from an apartment to a house, and you're like, okay, I'm going to move into a house. Am I going to need all this? What extra stuff am I going to need? So you could either go out and try and anticipate all the stuff you need and go and buy it. Yeah, and waste all this time and money buying stuff you think you need. Or you could just move into that empty house and then go, oh, I might need this thing and go and buy it.
Did you experience that being a dad?
A little bit, yeah.
Like leading up to...
My partner and I are as yin and yang as you could get. Yeah. So I think it was with everything. It's like if one of us thought we needed something, then the other one would be like, no. And then so I think that it was good in that respect. But we definitely bought way too much stuff. Like there's so much stuff we've got that we just never needed to use. Or you end up with so many clothes from as presents and stuff that... I think we like donated probably 3/4 of the clothes that she had because she just like they grow so fast and you don't even get around to wearing them. And toys and but also because we moved overseas we were overseas for 5 years in Singapore and Hong Kong and lived in apartments over there. But when we left Hong Kong, we left all our furniture over there, and the person who moved in, I spoke to them, and they ended up buying it. They just said, "Yeah, we'll take it," like because getting rid of stuff.
It would have cost you more in time and money to try and get rid of it. Yeah.
And it was like, so we basically moved back here from an apartment to a house without. We still brought back like a bed and just our stuff, and you're like. That's when you really know how much useless stuff you've got when you move, like, overseas. It's just... You're unpacking boxes of things that are covered in dust, going... I've just... And you didn't even use it when you're overseas. You're like, I've moved this overseas for...
Jess and I... Because we did that not too long ago, or a couple of years ago now, when we bought our house down the coast. And we both had stuff from our respective places, and... tried to declutter, which we thought was decluttering, and brought it down. And when we started like putting things in their places, and then just realized, what the fuck is this stuff? Yeah. And now, I mean, Jess has got her own business that she does on eBay and sells clothes and does reasonably well. But the two of us are just like nuts when it comes to like just finding anything that's not glued down in the house and just selling it. Just trying to find that's shit. Great. That's crap. And then just trying to make like even. Like Jess will go, oh, that's not worth much money, and I go, who cares? Fucking put it on eBay. Yeah,
I go through phases where I'm like, I just get absolutely ruthless. I've seen your like CD collection, being posted, and it's like, I remember going through stages. I was about to tell a story, but I can't tell it because someone will hear it. Go, well, you can't sell that. But yeah, like when you just have those moments where you're like, what's all this shit?
Yeah.
And then
especially when people turn around and say, oh, like for us, we were like doing our budget and we're looking at expenses and the money coming in and going, oh fuck, you're like, we gotta find some money somewhere. And we sort of just looked around the house and went, there's so much money sitting here with shit that we're not using. Some of it's nice to have and whatever, and that's fine, but there's just stuff that's sitting in boxes, stuff that's sitting there. It's like, why do we have that? And you start questioning everything, like even sentimental stuff that there's some stuff that you'll keep, but there's other stuff where you sort of look at it and go, why am I holding onto this crap? Because you're trying to appease someone else. Yeah, so it becomes really deep and you start like overanalyzing everything. And
I definitely got some things that I've kept that have been given to me that I just can't get rid of. But it's like definitely doing a big move, you go, if I don't need it, I'm just even throwing it in the bin. At the time, it's like, oh,
yeah.
And I hate just throwing stuff out, especially when it's. I'd rather give it to someone that could use it than just put it in the bin and end up in landfill.
there's so many. There's a whole industry based on like organizers now, like people that go to someone's house. And there's like reality TV shows and all this stuff, but there's a whole industry where people make a hell of a lot of money.
Decluttering and...
Yeah. Walk in and just reorganize their house, and they've all got their little nuanced way of like how they do it and little methods and philosophies around it. There's a lady from Japan, I can't remember her name, Marie Kondo or whatever.
I've heard about her.
Yeah. And it's like the KonMari method. And Jess is like obsessed with her because it's like this, there's a methodical way of approaching the whole house, but...
You end up just living in a white box.
yeah. But it's like anal. It's like total Japanese where everything's like exactly where it needs to be, beautifully like aligned. And for me, like I just throw stuff somewhere and just like, no! And like fold up the bags and everything. Oh, okay. But she talks about making a pile of things that you can get rid of and things that you want to keep. But even the things that you want to get rid of, she says you need to thank it before you let go of it.
Yeah.
And I laughed at it.
I thought I heard about that, but yeah, it was... Maybe you posted it or something. That was... I kind of laughed at it at the time, but it was like... It's kind of, you know...
I think it helps getting rid of stuff. Even if you... I mean... If I can give away stuff and I can donate it, then I'll do it. Absolutely. I won't be lazy and chuck it in the bin.
I'm a massive box keeper. Like, yeah. I've still got... I think I've given away maybe some of my old iPhones, but I'm pretty sure I've still got the boxes for all.
Oh,
because I'm like, one day that's going to be worth $11.
And then I can sell the whole thing with its original box.
Set. Yeah.
What is that something that you... Is that one of the main things that you hold on to?
Boxes.
boxes.
Pretty much.
But is there anything...
I can let go of pretty much everything else.
Yeah?
If you do wrong by me, I'll just let go of it. But boxes.
It reminds me of like people that would buy like action figures and not take them out of the packets and just keep them. And it's like, and I get it. I get why the value's there. But it's like... I don't know.
Yeah, I think it was genuinely in my head. Whenever I buy something, I try and keep it in as pristine a condition as possible, and I keep the box. And I think I'm always in the back of my mind thinking, one day I can sell this on eBay, or I can, you know. The first thing I sold, like through the trading post, was I had a dirt bike when I was in like year four or something.
That didn't come in a box, did it?
No. But. I think this is now becoming some kind of mental session. But I remember having this dirt bike that my dad bought it in pieces in a trailer, and he brought it home and he rebuilt it, and that was like my Christmas present one year. And but then I remember after using it and kind of had it for a couple of years, and then I was like, I had an old drum kit and a motorbike, and that was the day I realised I wanted to play drums. I was like, I'm going to do up my motorbike, I'm going to sell it, I'm going to sell my drum kit, I'm going to buy a really awesome... I went and bought a brand new Tama Rockstar with the money from the motorbike. But I was like probably 8 or 9 years old, like resprayed this motorbike, just pulled it to bits and just cleaned it up and put it on the trading post.
You flipped it.
Yeah. I think my parents paid $150 for it at the time, and my dad put however much time into it. Like, my dad was so DIY. He was an engineer, and he just, like, all our bikes and stuff were always secondhand and resprayed and whatever. But I reckon from that point was when I got addicted to, like, you know, selling things for a profit.
Mad. Yeah, cool.
And it's sort of like always in the back of my mind, especially with... running a business, or, you know,
it's perceived value. Like, yeah, even for you with web design primarily, but also doing the marketing as well.
But it's
so, you've got to sell something to them, you've got to sell a concept.
Yeah, and it's intangible. Like, you can't really touch a website, it's just a thing. Yeah. And on the surface, it looks like it might be a 5-page website, but like, you sort of, there's a lot that goes in behind the scenes that when you see the final thing, it's like, yeah, it's hard to kind of put a value on it. And unless you're actually directly using it to create value that can be seen really clearly, it's kind of hard to...
And I think this is what you've been doing with your... Is it a fairly new site that you put up? You were showing me. And so putting a mailing list together and then sending out content and information. You've got to sort of build people up to the point where you're sort of educating people as to what it takes and the types of things that are involved, and then you're sort of then selling a product and upselling to say...
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've developed that into like a... sort of that's where it started, and it's kind of the plan was to just kind of like productize web design a bit more, rather than every job being completely different and customized. Yeah. It's like there's so many steps involved that are the same.
Yeah.
But I've actually put together like a whole kind of done for you package for, and I'm probably gonna like, probably going to be firstly put together for accountants.
Yeah, okay.
Sounds really random, but my accountant is one of my clients for web design, and one of his marketing person approached me the other week and said, would you be interested in doing like kind of startup sites for like businesses that are starting out? And it was exactly what I was kind of talking to you about. And so I've basically set up this package, and it's like, yep, it's this much up front, then it's this much a month, and
because I think
hopefully I can do that to a point where then I can just play drums.
That's it.
And not have to worry about
it. Well, you've got, it's like, is it product 1, 2, 3, 4, and then you've got your procedure, your path, or your policy, or whatever that follows each one, and that's it. You know, you might have some that fall outside the scope, but it's
you
nice,
do a little
easy
bit of creative stuff, but as long as it fits within the kind of, otherwise, like most of the time it's fine, but like sometimes, and it always comes down to communication, like you just end up going so far off the rails, it's like, it's good to just have a thing in place.
Probably like a couple of my examples, like, I don't know what I want, and you're like, oh, how about I don't know.
Sometimes it's like different, if it's someone that I kind of am from a similar realm, it's a bit easier to work it out, but when it's like an industry that I'm trying to like not do work for things that I don't understand.
That's when I've
looked back and seen all the stuff that's gone off the rails, it's like, it's usually been something I've either not known anything about or just have no interest in.
Yeah.
When I'm interested in it, it's like
it's
a lot easier. Figure it out easier.
When you said before about accountants, I was gonna ask you about what you think your client would be, your ideal client. Because even like myself started us off, and when I was trying to find people to be on the podcast down the coast, and I created this long list, and I'm finding people online and whatever, and the amount of businesses that either don't have a website, or the website was updated in 2007, and that's the last post, and I think, oh, well, they don't exist anymore. No, they still operate. They've still got a full-fledged business, so they don't give a fuck about the website. Or people that have got a Facebook page only and, you know, do a post once every year or something like that. I just think there's so many opportunities for people that can give a service to these businesses that just... But it's...
Manage
it's,
all that stuff.
But it's like, as you said, it's... You've got to have an interest in what they're doing as well to a degree.
Yeah.
But it's also having some framework in place where you're providing a product to them. So there's not, you're mitigating the fact of, or the chance of them saying, oh, I don't know what I want, or...
Well, I reckon like those businesses that have a website, if they've still got a website, they still see the value in it because they've renewed their domain name and hosting. They're still keeping it running, but they may not have just had the website updated. Mm. So I reckon, and looking back to the type of work I used to do, was you'd go and say, or someone would come to you and say, I want a website, and you go, okay, I'll build your website. And that's where it kind of stopped. Yeah. But nowadays it's like, why do you want a website? What do you want to achieve with that? And like, every business has a different kind of goal for, like, obviously it's a marketing tool to have your brand out there and you tell the world about what you do. But, and I guess for most businesses, the goal is to make sales, whether it's directly from, like, through the website, or having leads come into the business through the website and then, you know, take it from there. But like, the way sites are built now is so different to before. You just kind of put a site up and hope people would come to it. But now it's like, there's so much noise out there, you've got to
try and direct
work towards the goals, rather than the website's just another tool in the toolbox.
Do you think, from a band perspective, because I think a lot of bands have sort of just been self-reliant on going, oh, sweet, I'm going to have a Facebook page, so that's enough. The amount of times I've clicked on a band's page, like, actually, the amount of times I clicked on a band's Facebook page, gone to about, and then gone down and seen oldmates.com, and gone, oh, sweet, they've got a page, and then it's just a redirect back to the Facebook page, and I find myself in the same spot, and I go, oh, is that it?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I freak
depends.
Out.
Depends. You've
that.
Still got to be active on there and engage with people. And I mean, I'm no Facebook wizard. Like, there's probably one of the best Facebook band pages that I follow anyway. Like, I probably should follow more band pages. I don't know. It's already cluttered enough on there. So. But there's this band called Old Man Gloom. I don't know if you know them. It's members from Converge.
Oh, okay.
They're like a super heavy, like, gloomy, like, really heavy, serious sounding band. But their Facebook page is one of the funniest pages you'll see. Like, I think it's the drummer who runs it, and all the other guys are in different bands, like Converge, and then one of the other guys is in a band called Sumac, and they're all doing their own thing, and they're all serious about music, but he just kind of posts these things ragging on their bands, or just ridiculous posts,
just,
and the comments
are
hilarious. But they're the total opposite type of band that you would expect to do that kind of thing. But like, I really enjoy reading their posts and just seeing what people comment, and they always comment back to everyone. And I think, like, that's, if you're going to just rely solely on a Facebook page, I mean, I think even just having a landing page for your band to put your latest release on there, and maybe a clip, it just sort of ties it all in as a neat little thing, and then links back to the Facebook page. But I think these days you just have to be really engaging with people. And saying that, like, we'll go through bursts of posting stuff, but we tend not to post that much when there's not that much happening with us. If we're recording or something, there's things happening, and
because
you've got to come up with the content. It's kind of, it's, as you know, it's hard.
Yeah, man, it's hard. Like, I'll try and repurpose content as much as I can, and for us, like, we've put things out, but we haven't put a full album out for years, and we haven't played in ages either. So it's like, okay, what can we talk about? Oh, did you know? Or just like crap. But sometimes it's good to put something semi-regular out anyway, so it's just helping with, I don't know, any of the mystical algorithms if they exist, and, you know, just trying to have something moving so it shows it's still active. But I don't know, I agree, like, you know, even if your website's just like basic and it's just got links to your social media pages, that's something. But I just think that people that have like a Facebook page alone for their band or business or whatever,
it's getting to the point now where every band has that anyway.
Yeah,
like, you almost stand out from the crowd by having a website.
Yeah, yeah. And
it's
then
gone full circle,
and then Facebook starts to die off for whatever reason, and another platform comes out, then you lose that whole audience. So you may as well have, like,
everyone will go back to MySpace. And
oh yeah, I should try and find that. I've still got my account somewhere.
Yeah, mine's still up and running. I think I occasionally get emails saying so-and-so liked your...
Oh, really? Oh, you got notifications on? Like, oh, I turned that off years ago.
I just can't bring myself to let go.
Who knows? Maybe there's a market there. Maybe obviously there's still an audience. There's somebody that goes there and uses it. Maybe there's
that that new one, Vero or whatever.
Yeah. Did you sign up?
Yeah, signed up. But
and they crashed.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they had like something like 3.5 million people that signed up within like.
Oh, didn't they say the first million was free or something?
Originally, yeah, and then everyone went, "Yeah, this sounds awesome," and then they went, "Oh fuck!" And so they had like 3.5 million sign up over like 2 days. Their servers crashed, and so the app just fucking died. And I was watching their updates on Twitter, and they said something like, "Just bear with us, bear with us, bear with us." And this, look, we're going to leave it open. All these people will have free subscriptions. Don't worry about it. But reading the comments is just hilarious. People just like get so worked up. It's like, fuck you, fuck you. It's
about
like
a totally free thing. A
free thing that didn't even know existed like, you know, 24 hours ago. And suddenly, like, the world's... I signed up. I used it for a bit before it died on me. And I thought, oh, that's kind of cool. I'll just leave it on my phone. And just, I'll come back to it.
Signed up, saw who else was on there that I knew, which was about 5 people at the time, and just... Went, I don't know. Yeah, went to sleep.
I don't know. I've still got it on my phone, but it'll be one of those things that I'll check back in a few months, and no doubt they'll sort their shit out.
There was another one called Elo, E-double-L-O, a while ago. That was tipped to take over Facebook and Tumbleweeds.
I don't know that one. I've tried to sign up with the Chinese one. Can't remember what that's called.
Bebo
or something like that.
What is it?
I don't know. Have you got like it?
No. I was gonna Google Bebo. Yeah.
I think I signed up to it, but then it just got so tedious because I had to translate every single thing. There's no like.
Oh, were you like doing it? Oh, yeah, Bebo.
Bebo, yeah.
Is that a social network or a search engine?
Oh, well, maybe. I
should know.
Unless
this.
I'm thinking of something else, but I'm pretty sure it's a social network. But I'm signed up on there somewhere, but I don't even know if I got as far as creating a proper profile.
I can't read it.
Nah, it's like, it's full on.
We did a Mandarin course when we were living in Hong Kong.
Oh, yeah?
They speak Cantonese in Hong Kong mainly, but we thought we'd do a Mandarin course, and I can only really remember, like, I never could read it, but the only thing I can remember is "Qing bu you chou yan."
What's that?
Which is "Please do not smoke."
Nice.
That's the only thing.
What is it?
"Qing bu you chou yan."
"Qing bu you
chou yan."
Chou yan.
I don't know if I'm getting it.
Something like, oh, close enough. "Qing bin yo."
"Qing" is like please. "Bu" is no. "Chou" might be a cigarette.
Yeah. Okay.
And yeah, no, yeah, just don't know what that is.
Okay, well, come in handy.
I want to say it to someone, specifically a Chinese person smoking, and hopefully they
have to go.
Yeah.
Yeah, what the fuck? Yeah. Yeah, I, I'll have to pick your brain sometime about, because you were in Hong Kong.
Yep. And Singapore. Singapore for 2 years, and Hong Kong for three.
Three, yeah. Yeah.
And it was really... Yeah, it was really weird. Like, it came up... We were away on holidays, and my partner worked for Nokia at the time. And we woke up, and she'd got an email overnight saying, "Would you be interested in moving to Singapore?" And, like, my first thought was, no. No. Like, I had no interest in moving overseas. And then, like, the next day I woke up, and I went, actually, that'd be fucking awesome. I don't know what changed.
Whereabouts in Singapore did you live?
Kind of near Holland Village, which not far from Orchard Road, like 5-minute taxi from Orchard Road.
Yep.
And it was a pretty sort of expat area.
Mm.
But yeah, it was like so close to everywhere in Asia. You can fly to Thailand in an hour and a half. And then, Hong Kong as well. And Hong Kong, once we got used to it, was probably a better place to live, just in terms of there's a lot more things to do. And
yeah, it's cost of living higher there than Singapore.
Astronomical. Yeah. Like Singapore, we moved there and went, this is eye-watering.
Yeah,
like for rent. And like Hong Kong made that look
just nothing.
Like cheap. And yeah, Singapore compared to here was like, even back then, it was 2010 and people were complaining about rent here and we were like, yeah, it's pretty expensive. And I guess like when you're there, you don't really have a choice.
Yeah,
you can either move home or suck it up.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't know how like some people, if you were born in Hong Kong and been there for a long time, and I'm sure there's like over on the, we lived on the island, which is more, it's more expensive there, I think, but still, I think even on the mainland, it's still expensive. It must be really hard for people that have been there forever. And
there's like this, I've never been to Hong Kong, I've been to Singapore a bunch of times, but I've always been curious because I've read about there's like this slum area in Hong Kong. It's this famous set of apartments or whatever, and it's
I don't know if it's still there.
No, I think they've either got rid of it or they've kicked everyone out and they're turning into something else. But it's like this one of the most condensed,
and it's kind of like being built upon just by residents to kind of, just because they kept having to extend it, but there's no regulations.
No, it's like its own city, basically. Yeah. Like it's like one of the most densely populated parts of the world or something.
It's definitely worth finding a photo of.
Yeah.
Because
there's some good articles online about it.
It looks like a caravan that's gotten out of hand or something.
it's something out of some post-apocalyptic sort of movie or something like that. Just like, you know, their own country, their own rules, anything goes, and it's just like this chaotic place where it's just crime and all sorts of stuff happens there.
Own government type of thing.
Yeah.
Carl, who plays guitar in Low, he's been filling in. Well, I guess he hasn't technically joined the band, but he's been playing with a band called We Lost the Sea.
Oh yeah, yeah.
They were kind of like instrumental post rock.
They got a shout out the other week from
Ricky Gervais.
I know. What the fuck?
I know, that was.
Yeah.
I saw I was at the pub with Carl and their guitarist the day after, and he was still we're all sitting there going, what? He's like one of our favourite, like the amount of hours we've spent in tour vans, and I've been in tour vans with them. He toured, he came over to Europe when we were there in 2013 and helped us out. And so you spend most of your time listening to Ricky Gervais podcasts. And so it was pretty mind-blowing.
Yeah.
But they're touring China in a couple of weeks, actually.
Oh, wow, okay.
And they're playing in Hong Kong as well. But it's like, it seems like more and more bands are going over. I saw a few bands in Hong Kong when I lived there, but there was more bands coming through Singapore.
Yep.
But I saw like Behemoth and Russian Circles, The Ocean. Not many more others. Singapore, I saw like.
Singapore is a lot more. I know a couple of guys over there that put on shows in Singapore. And they say it's a struggle because there's a lot of, I think there's a lot of politics around.
And it always seemed to be, there was a few regular venues, but it always seemed to be in different venues. Like they had to.
Yeah, they had to keep.
They do a few gigs there and whatever.
Yeah, but I know a few people have played in China, and Truth Corrode guys have played in China.
Yeah, they played in Singapore when I lived there, and I went and saw them, and it was cool.
Yeah.
We had a few beers afterwards. That was a fun night.
Yeah, just try and get in before the taxes go through the roof later.
What's that in Singapore?
Like, you know how the taxes change, you know, depending on where you drink in the bars?
Oh, really? The taxing alcohol.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe I'm making that up. You live there.
Oh, I don't, no. It was. I mean, I most of the time.
Unless you go to Walker Market, that's.
Yeah, if I went out drinking, it would normally. It'd normally mostly be at a Hawker Centre, but like.
Yeah.
Wow, that's. They're already like, $15 in a club or a bar or whatever.
Yeah, so it's sort of like you'd have your happy hour. And then, so, I don't know, I'm just making this up now, but from 6 to 7, like a happy hour, then 7 till 8, it goes up to what you'd think would be a normal price, then from, like, maybe 8 till 10 is a higher price, and then you'll pay like...
To discourage people drinking, or...?
I don't know, but the tax would go up each...
Because they know people are drunk and they're going to keep drinking anyway.
Yeah. So we flew in one night. We were playing in Singapore. We flew in late, like, I don't know, maybe 11:30 or something like that. And we went out and had a few drinks, and we paid something like $26, what would have been a schooner.
Yeah.
Of like, and I think it was like Kronenberg or something like that. It wasn't even like...
I reckon like sometimes they see you coming as well.
Oh, probably. Like, yeah. There's the local price, and then there's the dumb fucking round eye.
Yeah.
The expats.
Yeah, like...
Well, not even the expats, just the tourists.
But yeah, certain areas, there's like Clark Quay and Boat Quay, which are a bit like sort of Darling Harbour. They're always going to be... But even if you went out there, here, you'd probably be paying $12 for a beer these days.
Yeah.
Which works out about the same. But
I think even there, the schooner of Summer Ale was like $7.20 or something like that.
Yeah.
And I drove past somewhere, I think it was on Liverpool Road. I was driving past one of the pubs on Liverpool Road here, and it said, like, had a little special and said, schooners only $4.80. And I'm like, what do you mean? That's like, that used to be a fucking pint a few years ago.
Did you ever see that there was a post and it's someone had, some pub in Melbourne had posted something like pints of Melbourne bitter only $11 or something, and some dude commented, first comment was, I'd rather pay $11 to fuck my dad.
I've paid $12 for a bottle of Corona at the ESPY. Like, just like in the afternoon, there's nothing to drink, and then it was like, it must be in summer. And I said, yeah, Corona's a great idea. And then she said, oh, it's this much. I went, what?
Already taken the lid off.
Yes. Fuck. Just stung. I mean, Melbourne, smell is another world. Perth's another world altogether.
Yeah.
That's crazy with beer. Like, so fucking expensive. But anyway. All right. I'm going to cruise.
Yeah, sweet.
But actually, before we wrap it up,
we went on many tangents. We went on many tangents.
We did. But that's the way podcasts works. But what's the from a band perspective? And I know that you're getting a very niche with your types of customers. But if a band may have their shit together, and I'm qualifying that with shit together, how should they get in contact with you about web development, marketing, or anything like that?
Don't. No. Well, my main site... Oh, it's really hard to... do you know my main website?
Yeah.
It's Abepe.
Yeah.
abepe.com.au. And you can just contact me through there.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate the beer, and
no worries.
Until next time. Until the next harebrained website idea, and I hassle you.
Put me on the spot.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
Cheers.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. If you want to reach out to Adrian or check out Low, or especially the new album, Vestigial, you can go to lookandbehold.net, or as always, you can go to andysocial.net. I'll have all the links to Low, including all their video clips, which also includes the two that were filmed through Odd Studio, which were previous guests on the podcast. I'll have a whole range of other links and things that we spoke about, including Adrian's business. So if you're interested in web design or online marketing, please reach out to Adrian. I'm sure he'll be happy to field any questions that you might have. One thing that I forgot to mention at the beginning of the episode, and Adrian mentioned this in the chat, Lo is going to Japan in May, and he would have heard me in the conversation respond gleefully to him making this comment of going to Japan. Now, the reason for that, and I'll tell you a quick story, is a few weeks ago, I was up on the central coast of New South Wales, and I saw John Farnham play. And it was a great day, great show. John Farnham, amazing as always. As you guys know, I'm a big fan. Had about 12 hours of solid drinking that day with two of my friends, Andrew Craig, previous guest on the podcast, and another long-term friend of mine, Craig Kirby. And at the end of the day, we went back to Andrew Craig's house and we had a few more drinks, and we were feeling pretty happy by this stage. And we had this crazy idea to go to Japan. And we also had this group chat on Facebook where there was about six of us in total, so three other people that weren't with us at the time in person. And so we threw it out there. We said, who wants to go to Japan? This is how much money you need. And everyone responded. Everyone said, yes, make it happen. So within minutes, we had booked flights to Japan at the end of May. And this is the same time that Lo is in Japan touring as well. So that is the reason why I got all excited when Adrian mentioned and referenced the Japan tour as well. So if you are in Japan at the end of May, and I can't remember the exact dates that that I'm going to be over there, but it's around the same time that Lo's over there anyway. But if you are over there around the same time, please let me know. Maybe we can have a beer at a convenience store somewhere in Tokyo, or you can go to one of these Lo shows. So I'm going to rattle off the dates really quickly. So Lo are playing in Japan in May on the 23rd in Nagoya, the 24th in Kanazawa, the 25th in Shin-Matsuro, which is northeast Tokyo, I think, something like that. The 26th in Nakano, which is west Tokyo, and the 27th in Higashi-Kyonji, which is northwest Tokyo. The last two shows are about 15 to 20 minutes on the JR rail, one of the JR lines from Shinjuku Station. So if you happen to be in Tokyo around that time and you want to check out Lo or come and have a beer with me, let us know, because I'd love to have beers with everybody in the world. So let's make it happen. As always, andysocial.net, go and check it out. And if you want to support the podcast, you want to get shouted out in a future episode to come, I'd love to highlight what you guys are involved with and all the great things that you people are doing. Please, you know, support in a whole range of different ways: reviews, messages, tagging, recommending, sharing, retweeting, liking, all that kind of stuff. It all goes a long way. Let me know if you leave a review somewhere in the deep, dark internets. Maybe not the dark internets. That's another story altogether. But somewhere on the internet, let me know. I really appreciate it. And I'll do my best to repay the favor for you guys. But enough of my waffling. Until next week, please take care of yourselves, and I look forward to bringing another episode to your ears very shortly. Ta-ta. You're a day, you're a social. You're a-